Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Movement Radio. I am Chip Hazard.
And I am Talon Williams.
And as you can see, we're here with a special guest, Brian Silverbacks. Brian, how's it going today?
I'm doing all right. I didn't realize your name was Chip Hazard. I'm hoping that you did that because of Small Soldiers, but if that's your real name?
He did.
No, it's not my real name. So the story behind that is I'm a former professional wrestler.
All right.
And I got a call like the day of my first match, and I didn't know it was going to happen. And they were like, so you got to have like a wrestling name. And I was like, shit, I hadn't even thought about that.
Not have a wrestler name on tap? Like going through high school and middle school, like all we did was make up names for like, what if our superhero names are going to be? And what is our wrestling name going to be? Like you should have had like a library book full.
Man, I was just so focused on training. How it came about is I graduated high school. I jumped on a bus and went to Paris Island, joined the Marine Corps.
Hoorah.
I got a medical discharge from the Marine Corps, came home and
how long? Like during basic?
Right after basic, like literally 2 days after basic, I got a medical.
Was it like an ankle or knee injury or something?
He basically got a silver bullet.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Fucking passed out on a hike and they diagnosed me with exercise induced asthma and DQ'd me. Right on.
I got asthma, but I got medically discharged from the Army after like 6.5 years right around 6 years. Cause I went to Korea and Korea was so fucking cold that my asthma said, hey, we're going to fuck with you. And so like, it was, that's the coldest I've ever been in my entire life is in Korea.
And so
I got shipped back to the States and then I got medically discharged.
Oh, well, thank you for your service.
Thank you for attempting. Some people don't even get that far. You know what I mean?
That's very true.
You made the commitment. They didn't need you.
Yeah. So when I came home, I met up with a buddy of mine who had started wrestling and we kind of always wanted to do it when we were little. And so I went through training and I trained for 12 months. So I was so focused on training that like music, gear, name, it was just like all on the back burner. And they called me and was like, okay, your first match is today. What's your wrestling name going to be? You have to have it by showtime.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so I was working at a video store and I literally was putting movies on the shelf, seen Small Soldiers, and was like, that's my fucking name right there.
Right on. So, dude, so here's the story to come back to that. Like, when I was in the Army, I was a huge mark, and it was in the middle of the Attitude Era. Like, when I got to Fort Bragg, it was 1996, and the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars was in full swing, man. And I had gotten back into wrestling to be part of the in crowd at where I worked in the Army. They all watched wrestling. I didn't watch wrestling, but I could see that they were watching wrestling and that's how they bonded. They watched it. They talked about it the next day. They had favorites. And if I wanted to be if I wanted to be accepted, I would need to watch this thing they watched called wrestling. So I got back into wrestling and then dude, I just didn't turn it off for a long time. But I started a Front Yard Wrestling Association while I was in the Army. And so like once a month, we would set up the ring in the front yard and have people over. We'd have kegs, we'd have loud music and shit. And like all of my Army buddies and shit, we would all come over there and just beat each other up and then record it with like a little handheld camcorder.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is awesome. See, I'm happy that my name is so unique. So my name could be anything, a superhero or wrestler. So that's why I was like.
And that's your given name, huh?
Yeah, Talon is my God-given name, yes.
Yeah, are your parents like into wildlife or Native American history or something?
Really, my name came from a movie. Okay. Have you ever heard of a movie called The Sword and the Sorcerer?
Yes, the cartoon one, right?
It was, no, it was live action. It may have been a cartoon, but it was live action. And it was my mother and my father went to see the movie in theaters. Mm-hmm. And when she said she heard the name, she told me the story. She would say every time the name Talon was said in the movie, she felt me kick. So she goes, wow. Then I guess that's your name. Your name's going to be Talon, you know?
That's pretty badass.
Yeah. For a while, I was like ashamed of it because my name was unique. Because,
yeah, because you know, can't find the license anybody. Plate with your name on it, the mug with your name on it.
Like, the Coke can. Yeah, nothing. Yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, so when I got into wrestling, I was like, I'm just going to go by Talon. You know, because, I mean, my name is so unique, I could just go by Talon, you know. I added the Williams later on because William is my middle name. I just added an S on the end of it.
So yeah, yeah.
I can keep that, you know. Trained for a year. Actually, that's where I met Chip was through training. We were both trained by the same guy, spending 6 weeks, our first 6 weeks of training, not even training inside of a wrestling ring, training on concrete. It sucked. It sucked. And yeah. after that sixth week, the guy that trained us said, hey, boys, I got a secret to tell you. This shit's fake. Get in the ring. I'll teach you how to wrestle. I just slumped down in the ring. I'm like, oh, God, I can't believe this. And then he looked at Chip and goes, I bet you want to hit me right now, don't you?
Oh, he goes, RIP to the Iron Sheik, man.
Yes.
Yes.
RIP to the Iron Sheik. Sheiky baby.
Yeah. And the Gambler. Sheiky baby. Rest in peace to the Gambler as well.
I'm unfamiliar.
Did he not die?
No. That was a false rumor.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah.
I hate that shit. So, yeah. I hate it when people make false rumors. I hate it.
Sneaky baby, fuck the Hulk Hogan.
Fuck the Hulk Hogan. Fuck the old
that document. You guys have watched the documentary on Sheik, right?
Yes.
What a unique story. I think all the wrestlers in the 80s had like this unique. Everybody. Jake the Snake has a story. Macho Man. Like all of those people. Like they came from such unique, troubled, and all these backgrounds that I don't think the wrestlers of today, like the AEW wrestlers and stuff like that, I don't think they're not going to have that same stuff to pull from for their characters, which is why they're writing their promos and some of them aren't as good on the mic. The reason that some of the old school wrestlers were excellent on the mic is those motherfuckers did it. Like they lived, like they know that if I don't act like a man, I'm going to get my ass beat in this ghetto or wherever I live and stuff like that. So I've got to know how to talk.
Yeah.
And so I just think that that's one thing that today's wrestlers, that they're just, the world is different. It's nothing against the wrestlers. They don't have any control over it. The world is different though.
Yeah. Well, it's what we always say, man, is that professional wrestling is a microcosm of society. The professional wrestling throughout the years has always figured out a way to incorporate real life situations and any political climate and all these different other things and incorporate it into the wrestling world. Unfortunately, most of the time it's hit and miss. You know, yeah. I remember back in 2020 when WWE was doing, and it was the pandemic shows. They were in the little stadium or the little arena that they had, the performance center,
the Thunderdome.
Yeah, Thunderdome, brother. Yeah. And they did the deal where they had Mustafa Ali's Retribution group, which they would wear all black. They'd wreck the place. Yeah. They'd do all this sort of stuff. And people look at that and it's like, does that not remind you of like Antifa or some shit? And then it's like, wait a minute, we're taking this shit a little bit too, you know, Icarus is flying too close to the sun. We got to
bring this back down a little bit. Yeah, I think that's also, you know? The world today we live in like has an extremely large vagina and everything hurts it, like, you know what I mean? Like when the Iron Sheik came out and did his thing and then Sergeant Slaughter went to an Iraqi sympathizer.
Yeah,
shit, man, like that shit was like, that was next level. But that's how you get that character, that's how you get that X-Pac heat, that's how you get that stuff. Yeah. Is being on top of it and playing with the Antifa shit. Not, I think that's a little too insensitive. Whatever the fuck all that shit is.
Right. Oh. Yeah, 14 death threats is what he received while he was doing the Iraqi sympathizer.
Oh, 14, people. That's child's play.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
I can't remember who it was. Brian but some of these heel wrestlers in the 80s got fucking stabbed on their way to the ring and shit like that. Now you're telling me 14 death threats. Me. Half the pussies that sent those 14 death threats don't even have the balls to fucking kill a motherfucker. So shut up.
I love this guy. I love this guy. We need to bring him on more often. I like this shit. I love
Brian this. Said, shit, 14 death threats. I get that in a weekend at a convention. What are you talking about?
Hell, he probably had three.
Anybody who's doing their job. Anybody who's doing their job as a heel wrestler should be getting those things.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You wonder how many MJF gets on a weekly basis.
Dude, I don't know. He is so sly with his, you know what I do love? I want to talk about how well he's great on the mic, but he does such an excellent job of building up whoever he's talking shit about, because yeah. He drops real legitimate compliments on them to educate the audience to, like, he doesn't just straight bash them. He tells you why they're good, what they're doing. And I don't think I don't think a lot of people on the mic have that skill to to not only get themselves over as the badass, but to at the same time bring up the next level of talent. And aside from his persona, MJF is doing that to build everybody up and still come across as a badass. And that to me is a mastery of the art form. Is you're not just doing it for yourself, you're working on everybody. He wouldn't tell you that because he's always in character, but
always.
But
yeah,
it's obvious to me and anyone who's paying attention that he says so many awesome things about who his next opponent's going to be. And he builds them up. He tells everybody their accolades. He tells everybody the things they've done and how badass they are. And I appreciate that, because it's really nice to watch, because some people can't do that.
Yeah, because he has to build them up in order to tear them down. And we've had this conversation before. Yeah.
The most MJF does is get that cheap heat about, like, all the whores here in San Diego, or, you know, I could smell you when I was landing on the plane. What, like, that, he gets those, but that's not going to get you death threats, I don't think.
No.
That's just going to get people flipping you off and saying mean things to you at a convention. Like, he has, I don't think he's done anything that warrants death threats yet.
No. I don't think he's gone that far yet. I mean, he might one day, but I don't know. We'll see what happens with him, though.
But
I pre-ordered the video game.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went into the PlayStation store and I bought, I think it was like $72. You pay $72, you get the first season pass, and then you get the Matt Hardy's on the launch day. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Like the regular, like $60, was it $50 or $60? You get the game, but you pay for it like an extra $20 or whatever, and you get the season, which is the other four drops that they're going to do.
Yeah.
And you get the pre-order Matt Hardy bonus. So whenever that comes out, I'll just download onto my system and I love it.
V1.
I never liked Matt Hardy.
See, I always thought he was going to be the breakout star between him and Jeff.
Because he was the thicker one. He was the one that was meatier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jeff, just his charisma and everything took over.
But let's not get rid of it. Like, it was a lot to do with the face paint and the style of, like, once Jeff Hardy started putting on those weird arm protector things and stuff, and there was something that separated him from even his brother. Like, that was just the style. Like, that stuff, Jeff Hardy's dress matched more of what Lita was doing. Like that. Mm-hmm. Matt Hardy just felt like a guy in JNCOs or whatever. Like, it didn't, it wasn't impressive.
Yeah. But you also gotta think that Jeff Hardy also did a whole lot of the crazier shit than Matt did.
Yeah,
you
know, he did all the jumpy stuff.
He did all the jumpy stuff, all the flippy stuff, and people remembered that more. So after the, I guess, post-Attitude era, pre-Ruthless Aggression era, in that little small time frame, they were giving him a little bit of a rub, you know, especially the ladder match that he had with The Undertaker on that Monday Night Raw that one night, you know, so they were doing something with him, you know. But let's not act like Matt didn't have, you know, some
Matt Hardy just never clicked with me. I was never like, oh, I need to run out and go get the new Matt Hardy figure, or, you know, I was never like, I didn't do that. I really, though, to get, like,
I'm clipping that, by the way. Yes. I'm clipping that. That's gonna be
the thumbnail.
But I was really, really. So I knew that that Matt Hardy was for real. His hips and knees are fucked up. He did a local show here, and that son of a bitch could barely walk. And this was prior to the broken Matt Hardy gimmick. Like, this was when he was doing house shows and all these little indie promotions and stuff. Like once the show was over and he was walking backstage, like that dude should have had crutches, it looked like.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, well, that dude's, you know, he did his thing right on. And then the broken Matt Hardy thing hit with people. And that impressed me because you've created a brand new character that people can identify with and have fun with, that a lot of it is not based on the in-ring work. And yeah. I thought that's a credit to, like, I really thought that was awesome. And that's pretty cool that he was able to pull that off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So before we go the whole episode talking about wrestling,
well, I mean, the Boogeyman is going to be at FarleyCon.
So is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat.
Yeah. Yes. So I already have my Ricky the Dragon Steamboat trading card.
Oh.
Like up here, these are my signed. Like when I do conventions, I'll draw a picture of some of the wrestlers and stuff like that and some of the horror people. I'll draw them on a sketch card that's the size of a trading card, right?
Oh,
I'll draw them on the blank sketch card. And then I'll have them sign it for me. So this whole wall here is drawings I did of people and then had them signed. But like I got Danhausen, but I already have a Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. So when I go to FarleyCon, I need a Boogeyman.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be awesome.
And then 1 year at FarleyCon, I got, or last year at FarleyCon, I got Lex Luger and Ron Simmons. And the year before that, I got Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. But let's take a minute. Let's tell people who Brian Silverbacks is.
He's an enigma. I'm the enigma. I'm taking over Jeff Hardy's thing. No. All right. So,
I fucking love this guy.
My name is Brian, and I draw and I create art to make money to pay my bills. I was in the military. I was in the army for about 6 years. I jumped out of airplanes and I cooked bacon for everybody.
Nice.
I was stationed at Fort Bragg and what's the fucking name? Somewhere in Korea. And then I was a policeman for 7 years. And I was a janitor for 5 years, and now I've been a full-time artist for about 5 or 6 years. So this is all I do for work. So when I post on social media that, hey, I need some people to buy some shit, it's because I need gas money and ramen noodles.
That is awesome, man. That is awesome. All right. So Chip asked the question, you know, who is Brian?
Yeah.
I'm going to ask the question, who was Brian before joining the army, before any of this?
You know what? I think who was Brian before? Dude, there's been so, I'm hoping that everybody is a constant evolution and no one should stay in one particular version of themselves for very long, because you'll outgrow whatever that version is capable of. So I've been divorced twice. Less than a year ago, I got my second divorce after 18 years. So I ended up, if we're going to be honest, like the reason I stopped being a police officer is because I got a DUI because of my, like some shit I did off duty. Right. So I ended up losing my job and stuff. So there's plenty of things that I did incorrectly, but the fact that I did those things incorrectly led me to right here, right now, doing my very best to inject creativity and positivity into the world that I live in. Like, so I used to, like in high school, I was always getting picked on and beat up because I was a skinny kid, right? So I would make fun of people as a defense mechanism. And I don't look back on that fondly, but that was whatever. That's what I came up with to cope. If I could make these bullies laugh because I made fun of some other dork, then they won't fuck with me. And so I feel bad. I've since made restitution, whatever. Like, I've talked to some of those guys and I apologize, but that was that. So I did that. But I really think once I turned once I turned about 35, I really just wanted to focus on like making whatever is in contact with me better. Like, and I don't mean like I'm some sort of like waving a magic wand, but I do want to put positivity and, you know what, go fucking do that thing, or how can I help you? And like, I want to do these things. I want to make people smile when I go to a restaurant. I'm not trying to flirt with every waitress that comes in there, but I do want to fucking make them laugh, because I know that 90% of the people that come in there don't give a shit about their fucking wait staff. And so my, like, I take it upon me, like, I want to brighten people's day up. And I think that the good that I've done in the past, you know, 10 years or so, really outweighs all the bad and the negative and the hateful things that I was doing as a youth, you know. So okay. Now, so that's who Brian was. Brian's done all those things. And now Brian is, I don't know that I can be ashamed of them, because like I said, without those things, I wouldn't be exactly right here right now. So all I can do is encourage people to not follow my footsteps in that way. But this is probably more deep than you fucking wanted to go with that shit.
No.
No, it's perfect. No, absolutely.
That's perfect. So
yeah,
I get asked the question all the time, and you just kind of touched on it. Like, if there's one thing about your past that you could change, what would it be? And my answer is, that's it. My answer is, I can't change anything about my past, because without all the shit that I've done, I'm not who I am today. Yeah, I'm somebody completely different.
Yes, but right. So there's things about my past that I don't want to brag on, or I don't want to glorify. You know, getting a DUI is not something to glorify. It's a it's a stupid, selfish, ignorant thing to do, and to put other people at risk. So I don't glorify that, and I don't generally bring that up and be like, hey, look at me, I got a DUI and I'm still doing good. I don't do that. But without that, I wouldn't be here. So I don't want to take out, I can't take anything back, but I can choose not to encourage people to do certain things.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's a good positive message to bring to the world, absolutely.
So you mentioned that you are an artist, and that's kind of one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on the show, is because we like your art, or at least I do. I don't know what the fuck Talon likes.
You better say yes at least while we're here.
Oh, like I wasn't gloating about it when we were in Huntsville. Okay.
But what kind of got you into drawing and everything? Like, where did you realize that you had this talent to be an artist?
All right, so. I hope you guys like stories. I hope there's no time limit on some stuff.
No.
So in high school, well, in middle school, I think my dad introduced me to comic books because he was a fan of the Silver Surfer and the Fantastic Four. So we would go to the comic book store, and then that's when I found the Uncanny X-Men. And it was just before the Inferno. So that's when I found the X-Men, right after Rogue. And whatever. So I found the X-Men and I started getting comic books, and I was like, oh shit, this is awesome. So I started like tracing comic books and copying and looking and trying to draw the characters from the comic books while I was in middle school. And then in high school, you could take better art classes. Like in high school, you could pick your classes and stuff. So I take art one. So I failed out of art in high school, because I was choosing to do comic book, bloody gore, Wolverine stuff. And the teacher did not like blood. And so even though we were doing like pointillism or charcoal drawings, it would always be like some sort of bloody scene or whatever. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. You can't tell me I'm not going to do it. So she was like, well, the assignment was to do this, this, and this. And I told you, no blood. So I got an F in art. But so that was early 90s when I was in high school, and there was no email addresses. There was no just send them an email and send your portfolio and find them on Facebook or LinkedIn. None of that shit was there. So all I did was look inside of a Dark Horse comic book, a Marvel comic book, and I wrote a letter to whoever's name was on the inside, usually like the editor-in-chief, say, hey, my name's Brian, I want to draw some stuff. And you send little Xerox copies. You send like little Xerox copies of your art and you send it. And so I got a couple of letters back from Malibu and Dark Horse and Marvel that said, hey, keep going. And I was like, all right, well, shit. So, but honestly, in retrospect, I wasn't good. Like, I wasn't good enough. If you look at the stuff now that I did in high school, like, that is garbage.
Do you still have any of that stuff?
I do. I got one right here.
All right, here we go.
Oh, shit.
I got one right here.
We're getting an exclusive, ladies and gentlemen, right here on Movement Radio.
Oh, shit. Hold on, man. I got a... Well, it's not from high school, but it's close. I don't know where I put the high school one. All right, so I'll show you these three pieces.
Okay.
All right,
so I graduated high school.
I see some black. So
this says 95 on it. So this was a year after high school. So these are two characters that I created for Bad B Comics, which was my shit.
Yeah. Okay.
It don't look bad at all.
No, but
I mean, but I can tell it's not. I'm not an artist, but I can appreciate art. And I've seen, you know, I mean, just a few weeks ago, I seen like some recent shit you did at the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo. And like, I can tell that the quality of what you just showed compared to what the quality that you're putting out now is like head and shoulders.
Oh, well, yeah, dude, I'm like 30 years older than when I did it then. So yeah, I'm hoping there's some, but so I was 18 or 19 when I did that piece.
Okay.
And then I did this. This is back before I understood that copying wasn't really like a skill. So everyone knows this pose.
Right.
But it's a copy. So that's why it's easier to copy something because all the lighting has already been done. All the layout and all the all of that's already been done. Whereas if you're starting from scratch, when you're just drawing something, you have to figure out where the lighting is. You have to figure out where the muscles go. You're not just copying someone else's work. So that was, but I thought that was cool and I just never finished it. All right, so this is also from 1996. This is Spawn and a character I made called Magic.
Okay.
So I was like 19 at this time too.
Yeah. But I can tell. So when we met you at Huntsville and we were chit-chatting and you said that some of your favorite shit to do is that heavy black.
Yes.
You know,
now so it
I,
is.
I can tell, but I can tell like right there. Like,
oh, that's, yeah. I guess that is where it started, man. There's a lot of Sharpie on that bad boy.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
So you kind of stuck with it, but have evolved.
I didn't even realize that till you just brought it up. Like, I really don't look at a lot of my old stuff because I never, I don't know. I think I always just kind of pussyfooted around and was never really, I was never really committed. I was never like all in. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never said, I'm going to do this and set goals and stuff like that. I was kind of like, hey, I can draw. I'm better than you. Like, I can draw better than you. You know, so I'm that's all I want to do is I just want to be better than you. And that was just, that Brian just didn't, he didn't realize what could have happened. So in about 96, I stopped drawing. 96, I joined the army and stuff like that. I stopped drawing altogether. Because there was, I got those notes back from the comic book people, and I'm like, well, that dream's not going to happen, and I don't know what to do, so I'll go join the army. I would draw like one or two pictures periodically over time, but I was not I wasn't drawing, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
you were just kind of doodling.
Maybe, like I was a better artist than anybody in my friend group or my friend circle, no matter where I went. But I wasn't drawing. I couldn't even say that I drew three times a year. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't drawing. So fast forward all the way from 1996, when those were done, to 2013, I maybe did one drawing a year.
Wow.
And then in 2013, somebody showed me a website where you could draw like mashed up fan art and people would put it on t-shirts and sell it for you. And I was like, you know what? That'd be cool. I think I could probably do that. So I made it my mission to find those websites that did that type of stuff. And then I started asking them what it needs. What do I need to do? What do I need to have? They're like, you gotta have software. You gotta have this. So I started buying all the software. I started watching tutorials. I started buying all the hardware that I needed. And I started creating t-shirt designs. And so I was reintroduced. And at this time, 2013, I'm a police officer. So now I'm working 40 to 45 hours a week overnight as a police officer and trying to learn how to draw again and to include the digital workflow. So now I, at my disposal, I have YouTube tutorials. I have all sorts of information, Google. I have all sorts of help desk and stuff that just were not available to me in 1996.
Right.
So I was like, man, with all these resources, like I can really try to put something together. So in 2013, I started doing shirts, and the shirts were started doing pretty good. Like I was getting some good numbers on the shirts. And then I was like, well, what else does everybody do? Oh, so I went to a convention. I went to Walker Stalker Con in Atlanta. I think it was probably 2014, Walker Stalker in Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't even think they do that one anymore.
No, they don't. They got bought out. But
yeah. What was that
title? It was a Walking Dead zombie
Walking Dead convention. Okay.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
All right.
So I went there because at the time, my ex-wife and I were fans of The Walking Dead at the time. I mean,
I think everybody was.
It was like the first four seasons, so everything was still like, oh my God, Walking Dead, the biggest shit ever. So we went to Walker Stalker Con, and I saw that they had artists lined up on tables, and I met a few artists, and I was like, I saw them, and I didn't say this out loud, but I'm like, I'm fucking better than that guy. How does he have a table? And then I would see someone else, I'm like, all right, well, I'm like, that's about my speed. He's got a table. I can draw like her. How does she have a table? So I went around and I grabbed everybody's card. And I was thinking to myself, what do I have to do to get noticed? And so I approached one guy at an artist table. He had a table. And I said, man, how does one go about getting a table for one of these shows? And then he blew my mind. You just have to fucking pay for it. And I was like, oh my God, all you got to do is go to the website and just pay for it. I don't give a shit. I was like, are you kidding me? That's that easy? He's like, yeah, man, there's no secret sauce. You just go to the website. You say you want a table, you pay them, and then you show up when you're supposed to. I was like, holy shit. Like for some reason, I had built it up in my mind that there was some like magic secret society that you had to be a part of in order to be at a show.
Yeah.
And so let's give credit where credit is due. It was Geoffrey Gwynn whose table I was at when I asked him how you get these tables. And Geoffrey said, man, you just got to pay for it. He didn't use cuss words. Geoffrey doesn't cuss. But and I was like, so that conversation with Geoffrey, I immediately went home and I found like three conventions and I booked my first three conventions. I was like, I'll do it. I don't have anything to sell. So I took some of my some of the designs I did for t-shirts and I put them on like 8x10s and 11x17s and had them printed up. So I was just selling the t-shirt designs, but as prints. And then that's how I got started. And then it turned into that to doing fan art. So then it was like, oh, I'll do a Deadpool. Oh, I'll do Harley Quinn and Deadpool's grabbing her boobies. And then that turned into, all right, well, let's make up our own comic book people. Like I see people out there like Bob Burden has the Flaming Carrot and this creator's got his own thing, and then this person's got their thing. And I'm like, not only are they drawing, you know, superhero stuff that everybody knows, but they also have like one character that's theirs, that they're trying to make something happen. They're trying to make Fetch happen. So I was like, well, I need to start doing that too. So I started creating the Kara Prime stuff. And shortly after, so about 2000, well, shortly after, I was like, all right, I think I'm ready. I've drawn all of these fan arts. I'm pretty good. I'm ready to do some cover art. Because I know I'm not good enough to do interior stuff. I don't have that skill set. So I was like, well, how do I get on covers? I started seeing all these people doing variant covers and stuff. I was like, hey, how do I get on some variant covers? And no one knew who the fuck I was. I hadn't done anything of note. I've done some Upper Deck trading cards, you know, but everybody can do those nowadays. So it's not really like a brag or anything. So I was like, well, shit, if no one's going to pay me to do these Image covers or these Marvel or Venom or Batman, I was just like, well, shit. I was very disappointed. So I was like, you know what I'll do? I'm going to go to Kickstarter and I'm going to look for independent comic books that are on Kickstarter and offer my services as a variant cover artist for these projects and say, hey, Creator X, I see that you have a Kickstarter going on. Would you want me to do a cover for your project? And you do what you want, but I was giving away the art. I just wanted people to see my shit. So I was like, I'll do the cover free if you'll use it. And a couple of them said no. And then I talked to the guys that were doing Metal Shark Bro at the time. It was Kevin, Bob, and Walter were doing the first Metal Shark Bro. And I was like, hey guys, do you guys want a cover? They're like, no, they had a whole bunch of art. They've been doing comics for a while. So they had a group of artistic friends and they had all the art they really needed, but they were nice enough to say, man, we don't have any more slots for variant covers or anything like that. And I was like, all right, well, cool. And so I went ahead, I did the art. Like I did it. Like I wasn't asking them. I went ahead and drew it and showed it to them and said, hey, do you want to use this? Like, there would be no question if, you know what I'm saying? Like, you would know what you're getting. And then it's like, man, that looks good, but we just can't do it. And I was like, all right, cool. So like the next day, Scout Comics contacts me and says, hey, we're publishing Metal Shark Bro after they're done with Kickstarter. And we want to use your cover as the Scout Comics exclusive if you're okay with it. And so that I was like, fuck yeah, dude, like you're a publisher, you're in Diamond, you're doing all the things. Like, of course I would love to be a part of what you've got going on to get my name out there. So right. I worked with them on that Metal Shark Bro. And then I did like three or four more covers for some of their titles. And I was doing these and not charging anything for them because I needed a body of work to show what I could do. And they didn't ask for free shit. But I was saying, I will give you free shit because I felt that that was best for me at the time. A lot of people will say, don't, if you're good at something, don't do it for free or whatever. You don't never do work for free. All right. Believe what you want. You can do work for free and it can fucking pay some, like it can pay dividends, but don't do work for free when somebody asks you to do work for free. You are in control of that. So I know that I said, here it is, it's free, because I know that I'll get paid an exposure, and at that point I'm good with it. Had they had come to me and said, hey, will you do it for free, we'll pay you an exposure, the answer needs to be no. But I was offering that because I felt like that was what it was going to take. And to this day I pick and choose when I'll do shit for free, because I need what my name being out there can do for me. And then right. I'll pull back and stuff like that. But don't, so any creators out there, whatever, don't do shit for free if they ask you to. You are in control of doing shit for free, but don't feel like you can't do it for free. So I did a couple for free, and then they were gonna they published Loggerhead, the comic that one of the characters that I made. They published him and
oh, nice.
It's an action figure. Oh, wow. It's crazy. That's yeah, dope.
I did that on my own. Nobody pay, like, they're not paying you to make the figures. But so I made Loggerhead and I published that through Scout Comics. And that was middle of the pandemic. So that just kind of fell flat and really hit you in the balls and shit. So that sucked. And then, like, after that, though, like, I started finding these online vendors that were like, hey, Brian, would you like to do a cover for this project? Would you like to do a cover for this project? I'll pay you to do this. And I was like, oh, shit. And that the ball really just started fucking rolling. Going crazy after that. And then I reached out to Jonathan Hedrick and I was like, hey, that Recount shit looks cool. I want to, you know, want to do a cover for that. He's like, sure, man. I was hoping that you'd ask. And I was like, cool. And then I did the whole run. It turns out that was a very popular comic book, right? So a very popular comic book. And I got all four covers. You know, I did covers for the whole thing. And now, so that brings Brian, you know, a little bit more. So you do all that shit. And I just kept getting work. I kept getting work. And then, like, then the work started dying down. I was like, well, shit, I'm in Atlanta. They do movie stuff here. Why don't I figure out what movie stuff they got going on? So I started doing like extra stuff. Like I was in like the last three episodes of season 8 of The Walking Dead. I was on Spider-Man No Way Home. I did a couple of movies where I was just like one of the guys in the background, or usually a police officer. I was usually a police officer. But so I started doing movie stuff, and then I was like, man, this background extra stuff, it's kind of fucking elementary. Like, I want to do more. Like, I can probably try to do what that guy's doing over there. That guy's saying shit and moving and talking and doing stuff. I could probably do that. So I started taking acting classes.
Oh, nice.
So for the past 2 years, I've been taking acting classes. So we're waiting for that to start paying dividends. But I've been in a couple of music videos, and I've been in some short films.
Anything that we would know?
Yeah, anything we'd know?
The biggest one isn't out yet, but okay. Just last month I did a video for Rich Homie Quan.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Awesome.
I was an ambulance driver. So his girlfriend overdoses and he tries to get into, I don't know if she overdosed. I don't know how she ended up in the ambulance. I wasn't there for that part, but I lugged her into the ambulance. And, then his kid and his mother-in-law come to the ambulance, and I got to tell them what's going on, and they're all sad and everything. And then he shows up in his car and he runs over to the ambulance and tries to get in my ambulance. I got to be like, get back, motherfucker. Like you can't come in here. So I'm sitting here fighting Rich Homie Quan, like in the back of an ambulance, trying to get him out. So whenever that video comes out, like, that's going to be really cool. Like that.
Yeah.
When that comes out, that will be the most that my face has been, like, the most featured I've been to this point.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
That's awesome. I definitely, like, I assume you'll share it to your Facebook.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Once the video is out.
Yeah, we'll reshare it on our social media.
You'll
be like,
I know that paramedic guy. Yeah. And you'll know that it's new because I'm rocking the beard. Like the beard for me is maybe only, like, 4 months old. Like, I for the longest time I was just a fatty, so I didn't feel like having a beard. I felt like having a beard wasn't something that was in the cards for me.
I was gonna say I've the first time I think I ever met you was it was either last year at FarleyCon or last year at CusaCon.
I was at both, so.
And I was at both, but I don't remember if I met you at FarleyCon, like we spoke.
Yeah, forgive me for forgetting.
Con. Well, I've been hitting the head with too many chairs, so yeah. But I distinctly remember you having like maybe a goatee, or nothing.
Probably nothing.
So
maybe a goatee. I don't know.
Yeah,
goatees, so I think I rock them every now and then, but being overweight and having a goatee, like whenever I would look at myself, I felt like a henchman. Like I felt like I was up to no good. Like I felt dastardly. But so the beard, this combo that I'm having now is about four months old. Like I've been doing this for about 4 months now.
Yeah,
I'm pretty really happy with it. I'm getting a lot of nice, the ladies enjoy it.
I was going to say, it really suits, since you've dropped the weight, it suits your face structure. better. Yes.
Well, I just, yeah, yeah, I appreciate it. I like it. It, the only thing is, like, it may have to come off from time to time, because a lot of the roles, when they want cops that are clean shaven. So I may have to, like, scrub it clean every now and again, but I do enjoy it. And I like weighing less. I like the response that I get from people, because they saw me when I didn't weigh this weight.
Yeah.
So they can see that. And then when I go out in public and I'm dressed all nice with the cool clothes and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like,
you're usually pretty dapper.
I get yeah, a pretty positive response, but that's all in the last 4 months. Like, this is a change that Brian is making to be more of a happy individual. Like, I was happy before just wearing cargo shirts and a t-shirt because they loose and they're baggy, but that's kind of like a, for me, it felt like that was an excuse. Like, that's a fat person thing. Like, that's what you do when you're overweight. You tell yourself that you look better in cargo shorts and a t-shirt, just so you don't have to face the reality. And I want, so what I'm doing now is, no matter what I really do look like, I feel like I look pretty good. And I want to fucking showcase that with what I think makes me feel good on the inside. Much like when girls buy them fucking fancy ass panties and shit, it's not because they want people to see them, it's because it makes them feel good. Like, I feel like $1 million when I'm wearing these Victoria's Secret panties. And someone, that's a sound bite, but so,
yeah, definitely clipping that one.
So the girls buy the expensive undergarments not to be seen, but to make themselves feel better about themselves. And so now when I'm trying to pull together a wardrobe for myself now, it's not because I think that I look good, it's because it makes me feel good. Right. And fuck everybody else, because I feel good. It just so happens that people do like the way it looks, but I do it because it makes me feel like somebody needs to ask me, do I need any help? Like, I feel when I'm dressed, when I go out, I feel like people are wondering, like, should I know who the fuck that guy is? Like, that's the question I want in their mind.
So I follow you on Facebook and everything. And I just, you recently posted a picture where you were at a Braves game.
Yeah.
And you were dressed like,
that's my going out look.
And I seen it and I was like, look at this motherfucker sitting at a Braves game. And it crossed my mind. I was like, I guarantee people are like, who is this motherfucker? I need to go talk to him. Because you were probably the only person that was dressed like, you know, you didn't have a suit jacket, but you had the vest.
I wear a vest. I wear a collared shirt with rolled up sleeves, and I'm wearing jeans and some clean tennis shoes.
Yeah.
It's not hard to pull off.
No.
They probably thought you were a Mets scout or something. Like, what the fuck is this guy doing over here?
But so here's the thing. So you bring up that night. So first off, the lady that's in the photo is one of my best friend's wives,
mm-hmm,
who was supposed to be there with us, but he got sick while he was driving us there. So he went home. And so it was just the two of us. Because a lot of people look at that photo and be like, oh, Brian, who are you dating? Like, I'm not, that's just my friend's wife. You know,
right.
But so that night, throughout the Braves game, then we went out for drinks after. I got complimented by dudes on the way I was dressed. And I was like, wow, you know, for me, in my mind, it's going to take a lot for me to give another compliment to a guy. I don't know what that is. I don't know whatever it is. I think there's more of a barrier for a guy to tell another guy that he looks good. And so when I walked away with that night, three dudes separately had told me that I look good. I was like, fuck, I must be really, like, I must have something going on. So, and then, I don't know if this, I hope this doesn't come across as any type of racist, but Black people, when it comes to fashion, know what the fuck's going on.
Like, oh, they do.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Fuck.
So they're usually ahead of the curve, right?
And yes. So
the three that gave me the compliment were three Black dudes. And I was like, so that's like, I'm walking around like, dude, three Black dudes just told me I fucking look good. I was like, that's gotta be like, my mind was like, I know that I'm on the right track.
Like, right. So it's funny you bring that up, because you just posted something on Twitter a few days ago about having the confidence of a BBW.
A big, beautiful black woman.
Black woman, yes.
Yeah, I've seen people, that one. Yeah,
I seen some comments and people were trying to go at you like, oh, like, what are you, why are you being racist? And like, I got it immediately when I read it, I knew where you were going. But I also, I grew up in an all black neighborhood. Uh-huh. So like I growing up, we were the only white family in an all black neighborhood. I went to like all black schools growing up and everything. So I knew where you were coming from with that comment. But like when I read it, I was like, I knew exactly where the fuck
I posted that from. And I figured some people would get, oh, what are you doing? What are you talking? Just misunderstand it. Mm-hmm. But then the post isn't fucking for you. Like that, that's what fuck you. If you don't understand it, just fucking scroll on, man. I didn't ask you to stop.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said. There is there's a level of confidence that overweight black women have that whether I like it or not, or whether I want to look at it or not, the level of confidence is to be admired.
Yeah. Because they don't give a fuck. They wear what they like.
And I don't rock that shit. And so some people could say like, oh, well, big women, they're wearing the shitty clothes, whatever. No, these big, beautiful black women will wear like designer shit, but in extra large sizes. And they're dressed that way on purpose. Like they know they're intentionally wearing things the way they want to wear it. And they're like, fuck whoever doesn't get it.
Right.
And that's a level of confidence that a lot of people do not have. Some people just aren't confident in their movie choice. They aren't confident in what lane they need to be in driving. They're not, these big, beautiful black women don't give a fuck, and they are all in all the way. And that's that confidence is, man, I wish I had the confidence to do that.
You and me both, brother.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I didn't mean that as a dig, and I wanted it to come like that. Is it's not trying to be funny. I wasn't trying to be a comedian. Mm-mm. But if you boil it down to the amount of confidence it takes to do that, and how much courage and how much self-reliance you have to have, or you know, self-love or whatever to pull it off, like that's to be admired, because I find myself lacking. Like from time to time I'll get down, I'll get in my own head, and I'll start telling myself I'm such a piece of shit and stuff like that. Like that happens, but
every day, every damn day.
Those, well, shit, man, you can't do it every day, man. Then you got to talk to somebody.
That's true.
Like you got to figure that out. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but if whatever you're talking about happens every day, then it needs to be addressed. So that's terrible.
That's true.
That's terrible. So I'm sorry about that. But so when I think about how much, you know, when I start bad mouthing myself, you know, like the self-confidence that those women have, you're like, all right, they don't give a fuck what people think. Why am I sitting here worried about what other people think about what I got going on? Like, fuck them.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom used to tell me all the time, like, we would be going somewhere and she'd put something on and my dad would say something like, you're going to wear that out? And she'd be like, well, if they don't like what I look like, tell them to look the other fucking way, because I'm comfortable and this is what I'm going to wear.
Yeah. You know, I appreciate that.
You know, my dad was a real piece of shit.
That happens.
Yeah. We won't get into that. Like,
that's for a different discussion for.
Yeah.
Different
if I got the phone call today that he was dead, I wouldn't shed a tear. I have forgiven him for the things he's done in the past, but I'll never forget it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Talon, what were you going to say?
I totally forgot. I blanked.
I apologize.
We were talking about the depression stuff. I think you were going to piggyback on that.
No, it's, I guess you could say that like growing up for me, like I felt the need to try to be accepted. You know what I mean?
Dude,
like,
everybody does. That feeling you have of wanting to be accepted, it doesn't go away. So you just have, like right now, I have that same fight. I'm probably older than you guys. Like, I
would say you're not. If you're older than me, it's not by much.
I'm 47.
I'm 40, so.
Yeah, that's 7 fucking years, homie. That's
a lot. Yeah, but that's not a lot.
But
he's got a decade on me, so yeah.
So Talon, that's not going to go away. So you're going to have to figure out how to manipulate that and cut the fat out of it. When does it matter to be accepted? So I don't want you to think that it's good. Yeah. You could tell your story. I'm sorry I cut you off.
No, it's all good. No, it's just, you know, I guess it's just, you know, growing up, you know, being the outcast in a lot of ways, because that's kind of like how I felt as I was growing up, and being told that I was the weird kid because I liked pro wrestling or I liked comic books or I liked heavy metal music. Like, I was the weird kid, you know, so I was kind of a loner, you know, throughout a lot, you know. And when I discovered, like, I was a wrestling fan my whole life, and then when I actually got into the wrestling business, I felt like I was accepted.
Yeah.
Until later on down the line, it's like, why am I not getting these opportunities that other people are getting? And I'm working just as hard.
You cannot do that.
And that, yeah. But through wrestling, and I did it for 20 years, had I not made the decision to jump in with both feet into wrestling, then a lot of, like, I wouldn't have met, you know, Chip. I wouldn't have met, you know, a friend of a friend of another friend, in which I met my wife through.
Yeah.
You know, so I wouldn't have that, you know. So there's, you know, it's helped me out a lot. And now with this venture that we're doing right here, you know, it's gotten better for me because I do feel like I've been accepted more from the comic community, from the conventions and stuff like that, because I have had more fun in the 4 years that we've been doing this podcast, or almost 4 years since we've been doing this podcast, in the entire 20 years that I was a professional wrestler.
Yeah. And it hurts a lot less.
It hurts a whole lot. You ain't less.
Fucking kidding.
It hurts a whole lot less. And I get to meet people. We get to have similar conversations. We talk, you know, and it's almost like, it's like, man, this is kind of what I've been wanting. This is kind of what I've been asking for. Just the ability to, it don't matter the shit we've done in the past or any of that shit. It's like, this is, it helps me. But I do have my days where it's like, do I still belong? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes I do have them feelings, and I do have those.
I get it. I get it, know, man. Just know things, that that's, you know, a temporary feeling. It's a temporary feeling. But I mean, so out of all the media that I consume, I'll tell you this. If you watch Hot Ones and even remotely model your type of interviews to the depth of questions that Sean asks on Hot Ones, you will have the most intriguing interviews on podcast. Are you guys familiar with the show?
Yes, I'm familiar with Hot Ones, yes.
Like, that guy does an extreme amount of homework. And so when guests are on his show, they'll get asked questions that aren't like circuit questions, because, you know, when they do their movie media circuit, like, they're going to get asked the same 6 questions by every different outlet and every different podcast. They're going to ask the same 6 fucking questions.
Right.
So I encourage you to make the podcast grow even better is to step outside of the softball questions and somehow just break the mold of tell us what you're doing. Come up with something, whether it's a game, like a game show or some little, I'm going to say these words back and forth and you tell me the first thing that comes to mind, something that they're not going to get from another podcast or another interview. That will set whatever you guys are doing that next level. Like, that will be the fucking hot shit. So fuck around and see what that is for you guys. And it'll be awesome, I think.
That sounds like a great idea.
Appreciate that advice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually did have a question for you, though, because I looked at the...
This by no means was a slam. I'm simply...
No,
you guys
absolutely
are talking
not.
About trying to really go balls in on a podcast. And from my observation, from all the stuff that I intake, that's what will separate you from every motherfucker that's got a microphone and a fucking StreamYard key.
Right.
Right.
And we definitely appreciate that. I did want to ask you this one question, because we were looking at your artwork when we were in Birmingham. I'm sorry, Huntsville, and looking through all the stuff. And it's like, I was looking at one. You showed me one picture. It was like a skull that was like robotic skull. I can't exactly remember the exact photo that I seen. And I was thinking, I'm like, damn, this looks like it could be a tattoo for somebody. Have you actually thought about maybe doing like tattoo flash and things of that nature? Has anybody asked you like, hey, can you draw me up a tattoo or anything like that? Have you had offers like that or anything?
I've been asked my whole life to draw me a tattoo, draw me a tattoo. And I've done it, but I don't think that's where I was built to be.
Right.
Because there's a level of science and artistry involved in tattoo, not just in tattoo drawing, because I understand flash is flash,
yeah. But
a true drawing someone a tattoo really requires to know where it's going to be on the body. And I need to measure and see how, like, tattoo artist, it's understated the artistry in true tattoos, not flash tattoos or, you know, paint, give me a Pepsi logo or whatever, like not that stuff.
Right.
But the ones that will do like a custom dragon turning into a butterfly and all this cool shit, like they do that at specific points on your arm or your leg, like that is just a level to be admired, like of a true tattooer. Like, so I do it. My drawings, and if people want to get them into tattoos, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I'm flattered that anybody would get tattoos of my shit on their body, but I don't go into it with the intention of tattooing. And then the people are like, oh, you're such a good artist, why don't you get into tattooing? I'm like, holy shit, man, I'm still trying to figure out drawing and this other stuff. Like, tattooing isn't just picking up a machine. Like, I looked into it now that they got the wireless tattoo machines that are just like chargeable or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was really thinking about it. And then I looked into what it would take for me to invest just to practice on the fake skin and stuff like that. I'm just like, man, I don't make enough money. Maybe if money wasn't an issue, I would probably want to learn how to do it a little bit. Right. But I have to be very frugal, since starving artist is a legit thing. That is right. Where I am. And I have to be pretty frugal with where I put my money.
Right. Okay.
But I just that got, being said, yeah. I do have several people walking around with tattoos of my stuff on their body that I know of.
Okay.
That you know of.
So let's see. My brother's got a tattoo that I did, that I drew. There's a couple of army guys that have tattoos that I drew. And then people, even like some of the t-shirt design stuff that I did from like 2013, there's people that have some of those as tattoos, like a Harley Quinn, like a Powerpuff Girl Harley Quinn. I've seen people get that. And my Boba Fett Deadpool, I've seen people get that. So there's a couple of silverback tattoos running around.
Right. Right. I wanted to ask, because I did see some of that art. I'm like, man, that would be a badass tattoo.
I do look at it. Like, recently, now that I'm doing a drawing every day, like, I've, for anyone that follows me on social media, I do one digital drawing every day to try to just up myself. And I do those knowing that most of those could kind of fit into that flash category. So I do kind of think what would be cool or, you know, stuff like that. But that's not the main focus behind it.
Right.
I was just about to bring that up. It's funny that you say that, because I was going to say, I've noticed that you do a drawing every day, and it seems to be kind of a different art style. You're not always doing the same.
Because I'm using, I am using the daily drawing to stretch past what I'm used to stretch, mm-hmm. to do things I'm not good at. And currently this month I'm working on lettering stuff, like coming up with custom letters and stuff like that. I don't do that. So this month is going to be shitty artwork that I'm posting, but I'm posting it. And at the same time, I'll be getting better because I'm repeatedly doing it. So I'm learning the software because when I started this, I didn't know how to use the software. I'd never drawn on an iPad before. So now I'm drawing on an iPad. I'm using an interface. I'm using a tool that I have not used before. So this daily drawing is familiarizing me with the not only the interface and the software, but I'm also consciously not doing like fan art shit. Like it would be easy for me to draw a Deadpool every day or a Batman or a whatever every day. But if you look back at the body of work that I've done for my daily drawings, it's just generic shit that Brian doesn't normally draw because I need to learn, like I'm trying to learn how to be better and do more shit and not be stagnant.
That was leading into my question is what's the ultimate goal at the end of the year, you know?
Oh, this is more than a year. Like the goal is to just be better. And selfishly to set an example to encourage other people to maybe, you know, say, hey, you know what? If Brian's doing that, I should give it a shot. I don't want to pretend like I have some huge influence over people, but there are a couple of people that reach out and say, you know, hey, I like what you're doing because of something you said or something you did. I went and did this cool positive thing. And I'm like, fuck yeah. So when I post positive messages, when I post that I'm walking my dog every day, when I post that I'm losing weight, when I post that I'm doing this drawing that sucks every day, I'm doing that for the one person that says that helped me. Like that's who all of that shit is for. And if it's not for you, then fucking scroll on. But I do that because somebody finds what I do encouraging. And I want to make that number higher. Like I, not selfishly, but because I think the world needs more people to actually look up to. People that can, fucking good people. Like, I think so. If I can be that to anybody, that's what I want to do.
That's awesome.
That is great, man. That's amazing.
We'll kind of start to wrap up here. There's so much more, but I want to get you on maybe another time.
All right.
To go a little deeper. So I have.
I don't have a problem. Like I'm pretty unemployed at the moment. So,
we got a little deep on this one. So I mean, yeah. we go deeper if you want. That's fine.
But
I enjoy sharing because I think that one person will listen to this and take something away from it.
Right. So my next thing is if you could give anybody out there one piece of advice. What's that piece of advice?
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
And there's no, so I see people posting on social media. Oh, I'm a blue guy. Oh, I'm a red guy. Oh, I like this thing. Hey, fuck that thing. So to me, I may not like whatever the blue thing is, but then I shouldn't comment and I should just keep going. But there are the people that choose to say, I hate blue. I'm a red person. So let me write in the comments how much I hate blue. And I'm like, well, fuck, why did you even take the time? Like, that's the type of, that's part of the behavior that I'm talking about being a dick. Like, you don't have to go out of your way to be a dick to somebody. Let them enjoy the thing that they enjoy. Fuck off. Yes. If there's, like, It boggles my mind why people give a shit where people want to put their penis or whatever, like do the gay thing, do all of the things. I don't like, why is it everybody's fucking business? Who, like, I just cannot believe there are people that are like, oh, God's going to kill you if you're gay or whatever. Holy shit. You think, oh, it's none of your fucking business. Like, good. I don't know. Something about the way that the gay, I don't know all the letters, but something about that community. Like, wow, man. I cannot believe the amount of hate for no fucking reason.
So I had a conversation at my full-time job, at my real job. We just got a new employee Monday, and she's like super young. She's 17. And we were having this conversation about like being bullied in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me about this black kid that goes to her school that is being bullied because he's a black kid.
So he's a black kid in a predominantly white school, I guess.
Yes. And I told her, like, when I was in school, like, we that shit didn't matter to us. Like, nobody got bullied for being a different color. At the school that I went to, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for being a nerd when I was growing up, I got bullied for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, you know, it's just like with the gay thing, like when I was in school, like nobody gave a shit if you were gay.
I think, to be honest, I don't think when I was in school, I don't think we knew that anybody was gay or homosexual or lesbian. You know, we would use it as a joke. Oh, man, you're gay. Like, we would do that kind of shit. But I don't think we actually had anyone that came out and was like openly homosexual. So
at the school that I went to, now mind you, I did go to a predominantly black school. So there's that level of confidence that we were talking about earlier, that I feel like black people, African Americans have over Caucasians, that level of confidence.
I think that's a survival instinct. Like, you have to have that so that you don't get taken advantage of, so that you don't get bullied, so that you don't get run over by the man. So all of the so I imagine that that's something that everybody's taught, or just inherently, like, it's not like a lesson plan. You sit down and listen, but
right.
It's a survival mechanism, I believe. And now, so there is a level of confidence that is like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Right. So
Rage Against the Machine, man.
there were several people in my school that were either gay or lesbian and were very open about
mm-hmm.
it. And we didn't care. And I think the opposite in 2023, I think the very opposite is can be said. Like, nerd culture is very open and
very accepted
in everything, but it's that, like, if you're gay or transgender or whatever, ooh, it's not as accepted for whatever fucking reason. Like, it doesn't make sense to me, because, like, I was telling her, I was like, does it affect you personally if that person over there is LGBTQ+? And she was like, no. I said, then why does it fucking matter? Like, does it affect you personally?
Yeah,
no, I do. Then it doesn't matter.
You know what? I think that a lot of, this is not great to say, but I think when our parents die, I think a lot of that generation, that I think a lot of the hate against minorities and the LGBT community, it's in that age bracket.
I agree.
Yeah. And if it's not in that age bracket, it was taught by that age bracket.
Yeah.
But there's still people our age and younger that are very, you know, think that they're the next coming of Hitler or whatever the fuck they are, you know, white supremacy, whatever the fuck they got going on. There's still those people that are young, but they were taught by our parents' generation.
Yes.
And I think once that generation passes on, I'm hoping that the world, the United States becomes a more accepting environment. Golly.
Yeah. It's so crazy, because my mother was a very strong Christian woman. And there were things that she didn't agree with, but she always taught me, hey, what does the Bible say? Judge not lest ye be judged, which means doesn't matter what your opinion is. Doesn't matter. You love them and you make sure that they feel accepted. Because at the end of the day, who are you to judge anybody? That's one thing that I, and again, I'm not trying to be preachy about it, you know, but that is something that I did take from my mother was, you know, it doesn't matter what they do, you know, allow them to live their life, you know, worry about your own salvation. Don't worry about anybody else. You may not agree or disagree with anything that they say, but at the end of the day, it's their life. Let them live their life.
Don't be a dick.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
I don't understand how boring does your life have to be to where your excitement is to fuck with other people for no reason? Like, that's what brings you joy is fucking with people.
I think what it boils down to in the end, especially for those type of people, they don't love themselves enough. So they feel like they need to project that hate on somebody else to make themselves feel better. That's something that they have to deal with themselves.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But no one's calling them out on it, so they're not gonna.
Exactly. Then that's the point. No one is calling them out, and they need to call them out. You know, like, you got to actually get down to the root of the problem. It's like, why do you have this hatred for this person? Oh, because of this reason? Okay. Well, figure out why, you know, figure out a way to redirect this hatred, and instead of making it hatred, go in another direction where it's like, you know what, either ignore it or figure out a way to adapt and get along with it. There's no other option, either ignore it or adapt. You know, what other choice do you have?
Yeah. You know, hatred. But to answer your question, don't be a dick is my word of advice to make it in life. Like, there's no good can come from putting down somebody. No good can come, like, even if you do make your friends laugh, it's at someone else's expense. That's fucked up. It's not even like, you're not funny. You're not a comedian because you put somebody down in front of your friends. Like, that's not a funny thing. Don't be a dick. And you never know who's going to be like, from a dick to this person in high school. Like, here I am now, you know, so many years removed from high school that maybe that guy could own, you know, a publishing company and want to hire me or whatever. But you don't do it simply for that reason. But that's one example of, there's no reason to be a dick, because you never, like, the world is cyclical. Like, it's all about that karma shit, man. Like,
what goes around comes around.
You put out and then what you get. Like, that's very real.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. So what's next for Brian?
Let's see. So let's talk about appearances. So this next weekend, whenever this comes out, I don't know, the Father's Day weekend, I'll be in Heroes Con in Charlotte, which is a big deal for comic book creators. So that's a really fun show. It's my first time back since like 2014 or 15.
Oh, wow.
So I haven't been there in a long time. And when I did Heroes Con the last time, I had not done any official comic book shit. Like, I'd not done anything. I was just the guy selling, you know, screen print, like t-shirt designs as a print last time I went. So this should be a new experience. So I got that. And then we got Farley Con, and then we got Cartersville.
Cartersville, and, yes.
I got my art book just came out. Like, I did a Kickstarter for my art book.
Yes.
So those just came
out. I draw stuff. Yes. I've seen that.
These came in today, so I'm going to start putting together the people that backed the Kickstarter. I'm going to start sending those out. And I'm going to do some more watercolor shit, and hopefully people will buy them. So people seem to be liking them, but I kind of need people to buy some shit. No one's hiring me at the moment, and it's getting really difficult to justify the being an artist with nobody hiring me. So maybe I'm not an artist.
You're a starving artist.
Yeah. So convention appearances, more acting classes, more watercolor, daily drawings, and a couple of convention appearances, and always looking for work. So if you got anything you need me to draw, if you got some comic book covers you need done, and you got a couple of bucks to throw my way, I'll do it.
Where can they find you?
All right. At Brian Silverbacks, BRYANSILVER, BAX on any social media platform or silverbacks.com for art stuff. And if you're looking at acting stuff, you can go to briansilverbacks.com, and that's the acting stuff. Takes you to the IMDb and the resume and the headshots and all that good shit.
And of course, all that information will be linked below. We will tag Brian in all forms of social media once this video does come out. That way, you can all your fans can see.
Oh, and you like to talk. I think my name on the PlayStation is Brian Silverback. So when the AEW game comes out, if we have the option to like fight people online, you can look for Brian Silverback. So I'll be ready to throw down on some AEW Fight Forever.
Here we go. Hopefully you already say it.
Hopefully it's cross platform and we'll link up and run some shit.
Yes, sir. Yeah, buddy. You know what? I've never owned an Xbox.
I've owned every Xbox that's been out, and I the only PlayStation that I haven't owned is the 5.
Yeah, I've had all the PlayStations, but I currently have all of them except the PlayStation 1. Like somehow in my moving out of the army or whatever, I lost my PlayStation 1. But I still have I've got the big chunky PlayStation 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
I got the big chunky PlayStation 3. The PlayStation 4, they're all kind of slim, and then the 5. Right. But so when I was in Korea, man, so the PlayStation 1 was out when I went to Korea. And you could go there, and for $50, there'd be an Odyssey there that would open up your PlayStation and like weld some sort of chip in there. So you could play burnt CD games. So you could go to Blockbuster and rent a video game for your PlayStation, come home and make a copy of it, and then play the copy and then take the game back to Blockbuster. But when you're in Korea, the guy would put the little chip in there for $50.
Nice.
That was cool. I mean, it's thievery, but it was cool at the time. I was like, all right, cool.
Your statute of limitations is gone now.
Now I've lost that PlayStation. No. I think my oldest daughter has it, but I don't know.
Yeah. I still have my PS2. It's matter of fact, it's right over here hooked up to this other TV monitor. I still play it to this day.
I play Tony Hawk on the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, I think I have every Tony Hawk game except for 4. No, I got 4. Proving Ground. That's the only one I don't have. But yeah, I still play it to this day. Between that one, my Xbox One, my Switch, if I can find my damn Joy-Cons. But yeah, I mean,
what's weird is I'm not good at video games. I'm not good at any video games.
But do you have fun?
Most of the time. Sometimes you get on that Call of Duty, man. I'm just tired.
Rage quit.
I don't rage quit, but man, I'm just like, people will like, you know, guys at work will be like, oh, you want to get on later or whatever, when I was a cop. And I'd be like, I'll get on with you guys because I like hanging out and talking shit or whatever. But I'm just going to get shot. Like, I'm there to make their numbers better.
Right. Me and Chip actually played last night. And how long has it been since we played a game of COD together?
It's been a while. Yeah.
Long time. And then I was sitting there, I pulled out the building, I got shot. And I was like, hey, he's coming through the door. I got it. Threw a claymore. Hey, we won the game. Sweet.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good at video games. I'm good at like the one player. Like if I can play Batman Arkham City or, you know, Spider-Man, like I can play those one player just story games.
Yeah. The platform games and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
That's the good shit.
Absolutely.
Those are few and far between. Everybody wants the online multiplayer stuff.
Nah, dude, I'm waiting for Suicide Squad.
Dude, they postponed that so many fucking times.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully it's because they had you have to have online to play the game at all.
Yeah.
That's the way Destiny was, yeah.
No, you could play Destiny without being online, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I thought the second one you couldn't. Oh, no, not Destiny. I'm not thinking Titanfall. It was Titanfall that I was thinking of.
Titanfall, you did have to be online.
But that's a shooter game. Like, Suicide Squad is not a shooter game. You should not have to be online to play Suicide Squad.
No, not at all.
That should be an enhancement. not a requisite or requirement.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys. We already did the signing off. Brian Silverbacks, find me and fucking follow me so I can help people.
All right. If you want to hang out for 1 second while we pay some bills real quick. Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode. We hope you guys enjoyed that interview. Chip, anything you want to say before we bounce out of here?
As always, check out movementradio.us. That is your one-stop shop for all things movement radio.
And shout out to all of our sponsors. Of course, the OG, gearanime.com, audibletrial.com/movementradio, Canva, Zulily, W.GG, Entertainment Earth, Just Cash Clothing, Elementor, and Get Response. Also, thank you to all of our friends and family that have been down with us since day one. You know who you are. The list is getting way too long at this point. Again, Brian, thank you so much for tuning in with us tonight. Guys, thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next time. Hit it with the outro.
Please do not leave without leaving a like, comment, share, and subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform and right here on YouTube.
Check us out on all of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Check out the YouTube channel. Subscribe. Click that bell to get notified of our latest videos. Streamlabs.com/movementradio/merch. Go cop some merch like the awesome shirt that Chip is wearing right now. And once again, movementradio.us, your one-stop shop for all things movement radio.
I am Chip Hazard.
I'm Talon Williams.
And this is Movement Radio.
God's plan.